So now we've discussed the Sagun and Nirgun. So this will be applied in two ways, if you're talking about the Lord or you're talking about the living entities. Right? With the Lord means he has no material qualities, so he's Nirgun on the material side, and he's Sagun, meaning that he has all spiritual qualities. Right? For the living entity, if we say he's Sagun, then that means he is with material qualities. So Nirgun means he's liberated or free from those qualities, from material qualities. Right? So it's basically used in that context. It's not used so much in the context to describe the very nice, qualities that the Vaishnavas have, or the 64 qualities that Krishna has, like this. It definitely is not doing that. Though it's inferred, but it's not the actual main usage. Through his forms as Virat Rupa and Antaryami, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated outside and inside everything. Although he is pervading and, there is nothing but God within and without, he simultaneously exists as the Supreme Person, completely independent from his creation. Bhagavad Gita 9:4-6. So this is a very important point. Is we have to be able to deal with all these aspects of Krishna as the universal form, or in other words, the Brahman aspect, as Paramatma and as Bhagavan. We can deal with all three, then spiritual life goes very smoothly. The best, of course, is to deal just with Bhagavan. Everything is being done for Krishna, everything is being done as a person. We can connect it all very nicely just due to, you know, the mood, the relationship. If that doesn't work, then we're seeing Krishna as Paramatma, Krishna as his energies. Then we can connect everything, right? Because the more simple the life, or the more straightforward, then it's all connected to Krishna. Right? The more complex it is, then these other aspects, they have their value. Right? If you have something that, in dealing with it, you can't see Krishna in connection with it, then the reason you're dealing with it is because of the experience you get. Right? So that experience is Krishna, that potency. And that potency that is in the elements that are interacting, that generate that experience, that those potencies are Krishna. So right there you're dealing with the universal form. Right? Because he says thousands of arms, thousands of legs, thousands of hands. What are those? Those are everything that you see. All the hands, legs, heads, ears, noses that you see, that's all Krishna. Right? It's not something else. Right, so he's created all these. In other words, there's only so like there's 8,400,000 species of life. So there's only so many options of what you can do with a nose or an ear or a finger. Right, it has its limits, like that. Even the modern animators that they'll come up with all kinds of interesting things, but they're still taking from stuff that they have seen. Right, they're putting together stuff that they've seen. Even though it doesn't exist. Like Prabhupada said, there's no such thing as a werewolf. But they're taking a man, and they're taking a wolf, and they're taking the moon. They've seen all of those. They haven't come up with anything new. Right? They're still only dealing in Krishna's creation. So of this, there's all these unlimited combinations. That's the universal form. That's what you can come up with. Right? So that those potencies of those different varieties of living entities, the relationships that they have, the ability to interact, the kind of interactions that will be gained from relationship, and the results that are gained from it and the experiences thereof, that's all Krishna. Right? Why does Krishna say, he gives the example of the yajna. He is the person doing the yajna, means the priest. He is the person who is being done on behalf, the yajaman. He is the fire. He is the mantra. He is the ghee. He is the ritual. He is the result. Right? He is the inspiration. Right? He is the ability. So what's left? Right? That's the point. Is it's all Krishna. The living entity is simply sitting and watching the show. Of course, what show he wants to watch, that's his choice. Right? You know, you have 100 channels. It's your choice which one you want to watch. But the point is who says there's only 100 channels? right? Who says at what time they work? Not the person with the remote. So that's the whole point. It's whatever the field of activities you're in, that's all established by Krishna. Then within that, you have your desire of what you're interested in, not interested in, what you want to watch, don't want to watch. Does that make sense? So like that, then the whole creation goes on. So in this way, then we can understand it's Krishna's potencies. That's what's making everything work. So through this understanding, you can connect anything to Krishna. Right? There's nothing that can't be connected. But the point is this is the level we're dealing on, Brahman. Right? But the point is even though all this has been established nicely, you know, all the Sagun and Nirgun and the Brahman and Paramatma and all these things, but still beyond that, unless one appreciates that Krishna exists separately from that as a person, then the devotion won't really happen so good. Because these other things are very nice for gaining knowledge, gaining renunciation, gaining freedom from the material world. Right? But they are not the impetus of developing pure unalloyed love and devotion to Krishna. Right? That comes from you as a person is appreciating Krishna as a person and that relationship. Right? Does that make sense? But, so that is the foremost. That's why of the rule, always remember, never forget. Always remember is the primary element. Never forget is the supporting. Right? If you're always remembering, you won't forget. But the problem is as a conditioned soul, there's plenty of things that we have that make us forget. But that's secondary. So therefore, dealing with the Paramatma and the Brahman, these elements are to remove anything that makes you forget Krishna. But the directly remembering Krishna through his name, form, qualities, and pastimes, that's another process. You know, sir? Or let's say another aspect. That is the process. This other is simply to get rid of anything that gets in the way of this process. Does that make sense? So they're important. They go together. But at the same time, they are different. Right? Just as Krishna is everything, has entered into everything, but at the same time he's different as a person. So in the same way, all these aspects of devotional service that purify you, elevate you, free you from material contamination, they're part of the process, but there's still the devotional aspect of you actually committing that I want to serve Krishna as a person. That's another element. Does this make sense? So this is what's trying to be brought out. As you notice, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is doing the same in his teachings of, you know, his Sikshamrita. He's bringing this element out that Abhideya, one has to be able to distinguish. There are those things that are very favorable to the Angas of Bhakti, right? It means the Jnana and Vairag. These things are very, very useful if they're connected to Krishna. But on their own, they're nice, they're pious, they're good, but that's where it ends. They are not devotional service itself. Being very renounced is not devotional service. Being really renounced, doing that for Krishna, the desire to do that for Krishna or please Krishna through the renunciation, that's the devotion. Right? And the renunciation is the medium through which you do it. You know what I'm saying? Is the cauliflower cooking? Is it the process of cooking? No. It's the medium through which you can cook. Right? You catch that? So this jnana, vairag, this karma and jnana, they're mediums through which we can express the devotion, but they are not devotion themselves. Right? But trying to connect jnana and vairag to Krishna, that's the devotion. Right? So it's very, but so they are, you means they go together. Right? Does that make sense? They go together. So therefore, one has to follow both. That's why then the sahajas give up all the form because it's only the mood's important. Right? And the smartas, they're only into the form and they don't understand the mood. So they both miss the points. the balance of these two, that's the devotional process. That's sadhana bhakti. Right? So Ishupanishad is then bringing this out here. Right? So Krishna is always bringing out that point, because otherwise we'll get distracted in the efficiency of getting things done, which is nice. But that's not actually how it works. Right? Does that make sense? The living entity is in the Purusha Bhav, means I am the controller and enjoyer. In other words, it's a masculine mood. So the one of the elements of the masculine mood is the focus on the activity for the efficient, resolution of the activity. Right? In other words, identifying the field, making the best use of the field to get done what you want to get done. Right? And that's the focus. But in that, where is the emotional content? Right? It's just an efficiency. It's like a machine. Right? So there's nothing much there for rasa. That makes sense? So that's the masculine view. Feminine never works like that. Feminine view is always, it's based on emotions, right? Because the starting point is not sambandha, but it's prayojana. Right? So prayojana is the experience. Right? You have an object, but why do we say one object is the prayojana or another? Right? It's the experience you get from it you call a prayojana. Oh, if I only had this, you know, then I'd be happy. Right? You know, it's winter time, I want a cheddar. Right? So when I get the cheddar, that's my prayojana, then I'm happy. But that state of happiness could be applied on anything. Someone else could say, well, I'm hungry, I want some Mahaprasad. That would be their prayojana. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, the state of experience, that's the prayojana. Then there's a medium for that, which happens to be whatever you establish it at. So that's why I said the ultimate prayojana is pleasing Krishna. Right? Rather than ourselves. So this state means that that's where the feminine is starting from, is that experience. Right? The masculine is starting from, you know, the creation is them. Does that make sense? So then Abhideya is the combination between the masculine principle and the feminine principle, or God and his creation. The creator and the created. So now, if this is going to have some common element, then that common element has to be the active application that generates emotion. Does that make sense? The masculine is active, the other one is passive, but it's the experience. So that action that generates the proper experience, that's the combination between the two. Right? The result is simply what the experience is about. That's why it's thought, if I only work and get all these results, then that will be good. Then the other party has to be happy. But it's actually the mood that makes them happy. You understand? It's not the action itself. The action is important because it is the medium through which the experience will be generated. You know, just like we're saying, the karma and jnana have their use in connection with Krishna, with devotion, but they're not devotional service. So the attainment of that observable goal is important in actually obtaining the goal, but it's not the goal. The goal is the experience. Does that make sense? So that's the natural position. So now, why would we focus on... Yeah. So, and now in this, what is the whole point? What is the motive or what is the inspiration for being involved in this? Right? Why would the masculine be involved with the feminine? Right? Or the feminine with the masculine? Right? Because if it's only observable things, that you just manipulate the field of activities, it generates more things. Right? Does that make sense? So you could do that alone. Does that make sense? You can wash your own clothes. You can cook your own food. Right? Does that make sense? You can make your own cabinets. But why is it done? Because of a relationship. That's what gives it the taste. Therefore, then Krishna is saying, without understanding him as a person, What's the meaning of the activity itself? It's nice, it's good, it's pious, it's well-intended. You're moving in that direction, but until you're doing it because you're doing it to please Krishna as a person, it doesn't have the emotional content that is actually pleasing, neither to you nor to Krishna. Right? If you're not pleased with it, what does that mean? Krishna's not pleased. When he's pleased, we're pleased. Does that make sense? So this is then how this whole system is working. It's very, very personal. It's not mechanical. Mechanics are used. Right? You want to cook lunch for the family, there's a lot of mechanics involved. You have to have money. That money had to have been generated by some activity that actually works according to economic principles. Then you have the money. Then you have to make the endeavor to make the plans. Then you have to go and acquire the ingredients. Then you have to prepare the ingredients. You have to have a field of, you know, that is, how you say, facilitates this process of cooking, right? Like a kitchen, right? And so then all that, then put that together. You have to have knowledge of cooking. Right, and then put that together. Then you have to have, people who are interested in this relationship. It means they want to eat, and they want to eat what you have to offer. Right. Then when you sit down and they sit down, and there's the interaction, the food is being distributed, and all that. That's where you get really the taste of the rasa, right? Because that's abhideya. Otherwise, before in your mind, you're performing the abhideya of cooking. But in your mind, the relationship is on either attraction or attachment. So it's mental. It's not active. It's static. It's only an experience. Does that make sense? So only the experience is strong, but the experience combined with the action is stronger. Like, I'm attracted to something. It develops a strong experience. But it's, you know, or I'm attached to something. That's a strong experience. But if that was the experience, why do we want to interact? Because the combination of experience and action, that gives the greatest result. Therefore, abhideya is the central feature, not prayojana. Right? So Krishna's qualities, the interaction is pastimes based on those qualities. Right? That generates then the attraction and the love for Krishna. That is what everybody's looking for. Does that make sense? That's the most important. Not just getting something or wanting something. Right? You want something, you feel alive. You're attached to something, you feel you have a purpose. But feeling alive and having a purpose isn't enough. You have to do something. If you're alive, you do something. You have a purpose, you get something done. Right? So that action, that's where the real rasa is tasted. Therefore, devotional service, not sitting in meditation. Does that make sense? The mother is in meditation when she's cooking for the family. She's thinking who's going to like what and how it'll be served, what's the situation that this whole experience will be had in. What it is will be the medium of that experience, what's the environment, who's going to be there, what's going to be the relationship, that's all meditation. But she's doing it for real people. Right? And then when all the people are there and the interaction's going on, then you think, now this is what it was all being done for. Right? Does that make sense? So this is the technical point. Why action must be there in devotional service? Why you need to know all these things nicely, otherwise your medium isn't very high quality. Right? Why you have to know, you know, who you are, what you're dealing with, what your goal, you have to be inspired. But the bottom line is, without the action, then it's called devotional service. It's not called devotional interest or devotional attachment or devotional mood. It's called devotional service. Because the abhideya is the prominent. Right? You can only have abhideya if the other two are there, of course. Right? So, does this make sense? But, yeah. Okay, so that on that, but just going back a little bit, on that, if we look at how complex that whole process was to cook dinner for the family, and look at it from that, let's say, you know, academic or technical point of view, you would think this is a big amount of stuff. You know, why do we have to go through so much stuff? All I have to do is take something, put it in the microwave, hit the button, in 2 minutes we're eating. Right? So, but still the same processes are there, just you're dealing with an inferior level of it. You still have to know which button to push. You still have to have it plugged in. You still had to have gone out and buy the 2 minute noodles. That means you had to have money. That means you didn't have to know where the shop is. You had to go there. So the same thing is there. You're just working on a very meagerly level, that's all. So it's not that you change it by saying, why be fanatic? That you change the field. No, it's the same field. You know, it's like, you know, why we should be out here on the battlefield, you know, with guns and cannons and this and that. You know, we can just throw dirt clods at each other. But it's still the same thing. There's still two sides and they don't like each other and they throw dirt clods at each other. Something's going on. It's the same. But the quality of it is so much less. But we see is so much is there. So that's why in devotional service, Krishna says, perform your duties. That means you have to know what they are. You know, so that would mean making the menus, you know, going, you know, acquiring the funds, buying the stuff, preparing the stuff, having seen that you have a field to prepare it in. And then the final point is then the interaction at prasad. So that's the duty, right? With knowledge means you have to know how that is. You know, you don't go down to the fish market and you're looking for, you know, cauliflowers. You have to know what you're doing. You have to know how to cook. You have to know how to serve. You have to know how to use the pots and pans in the kitchen. Right? Then thinking of me. Right? So then you're thinking of Krishna because you're doing all this stuff for him. You're inspired to cook something nice for Krishna, the devotees. You want to please Krishna through this. So that's the thinking, the desiring and the results. You know, the prajumna and the aniruddha aspects. Right? Right? Your attraction and your attachment. At the same time, he says, and do this for me as a person. Right? So it's not just, this is good to do devotional service, and I'm freeing myself, and oh, it's nice, you know, it's for Krishna. But it's actually for the relationship that you have with Krishna. Does that make sense? So it technically all works. It's not just a bunch of nice poetic words. Each word carries so much import. And nothing of it can be taken lightly. And if you understand these things, all the devotional process starts to work very, very nicely. Because you technically know what is going on. Otherwise, there's a lot of sentiment there. So the idea is sentiment is good, right? That means that you're doing it for Krishna, you want to do it for Krishna, you're pleased that you've done it for Krishna. That's sentiment, that's good. But at the same time, there must be technique. Right? Otherwise, having only sentiment and no technique, that's called, you know, three-year-olds. Like that. No one expects a three-year-old to have much technique. The sentiment is so nice, that's good enough. You know, but if they're 40 years old and they still have the same sentiment and lack of ability, you kind of think, well, there's something wrong here. You know, they should be a little bit more expert. Right? My 40-year-old shouldn't be, you know, sometimes walking, sometimes crawling, and that coming into the house. He's supposed to drive up to the front of the house in a Porsche. And he's supposed to bring home checks, you know, that we can buy stuff with, you know, rather than just, you know, crawling in the door and say, Mommy, I'm hungry. You know, you expect a little more, you know. Say you're hungry after you put the check on the table, you know, for 10,000 bucks, and then no problem. You know, you're hungry, we'll arrange it. You understand? So, this is the point, is we are making this distinction between the processes being used and actually the relationship with the person that we're using them for. Because otherwise, if we get caught up in the one, we forget the person. Right? And if you're going to only be absorbed in one, be absorbed in the person. Right? What is that, Shuta Dev? Right? He was very absorbed in trying to please Krishna, and he's peeling the bananas, throwing away the banana, and serving Krishna the banana peels. So Krishna will take that. That's okay. That devotion, absorption so much in him as a person, trying to please, the technique's not so great, fine. If you're not on that level, we'd recommend a little technique. You know, like that. You're cooking the Rajbhog, better to have a little technique, you know. You know, or as I heard one great cook within our movement say, if you don't have bhakti, put more butter. Because anything with butter tastes good, right? If you have bhakti, it tastes good. So if you don't have bhakti, just put more butter, then everyone will be happy, right? Okay, does this make some sense? Right.
Is he a skinny fellow or is he a big fellow?
He's a big fellow that tries very hard to remain skinny. But on his own, he's a big fellow. Okay. The Lord is the master of all inconceivable potencies. For him there is no difference between the material and spiritual energy, because he is the source of both. He can turn the material energy to spiritual. Thus he appears in the form of Archavigraha, to accept the service of his devotees. This Archavigraha is eternally existent with all paraphernalia, and is both saguna, possessing transcendental qualities, and nirguna, free of material contaminations. Since the Lord is the master of all energies and the supreme enjoyer, the living being should act according to his desire and not independently. In the purport to Mantra 4, Srila Prabhupada writes, quote, every part and parcel of the complete whole is endowed with some particular energy to act according to the Lord's will. When the part and parcel living entity forgets his particular activities under the Lord's will, he is considered to be in maya, illusion. Thus, from the very beginning, Sri Ishupanishad warns us to be very careful to play the part designated for us by the Lord. Right, so that Ishavasha means you have a quota, so that also means your identity, your part. You know, what you're playing. Right? You want to be a brahmachari, that's a part. So if it's your quota, you play it. If you're a family member, you play that part. Right, so it's not just about this is us, and then, you know, it's already ours and it's all to do with us. Now we add Krishna, that's where you start from. But actually, it's all Krishna's anyway. So you have to play your part. So that's the part given to you by Krishna. Right? So this principle goes goes in all directions. You understand this, from this one thing, one can perfect one's life. Right? Because Krishna is saying, do your duty. Right? So that is your quota. Right, with knowledge, so that intelligence is also your quota. So use it. Right, that is being done for Krishna. You have to involve him in it. You have to see the connection. Right, so that's the technical points. But there's still him as a person. You as a person, him as a person. So there's you as a person, there's him as a person. Then there's the technique used as the medium. Right, so that technique is always there. It's just a matter of, if you're practiced at it, it comes very easily. If you're not practiced, it doesn't come so easily. Right? If you're practiced, you might become proud. That's useless. So therefore, when you're not proud, that's better for Krishna. Right? Because Krishna is not, he's God. He does everything just what he wants. It happens. So therefore, he doesn't appreciate it if others are proud. It means their source of ability comes from him. He's not proud of his unlimited ability. So why should anybody else be proud of their portion of his ability anyway? You know what I'm saying? The guy is very rich. He's not puffed up with his money. His son has part of that money, and he's very proud. Right? Not very pleasing. Right? Like that. So that's the whole idea. Krishna's not proud, so we're not proud. Then you can act natural. Right? Because pride always means that there's ignorance there. So that means then there's going to be, the relationship's going to be contaminated in some way. Does that make sense? So everything we can see is boils down to how to make the relationship work very nicely. And so if we just immediately come in contact with Krishna, fall in love with Krishna, then we don't need all this technicality. But since basically, in general, those in the material world aren't necessarily known for their great love for Krishna, right? Then it has to be technically pointed out according to their ability, yes.
How does pride relate to high level of self-esteem and how does low level of self-esteem relate to humility? What's their...
Basically, they don't really relate to each other. They're connected.
Well, one takes them...
One takes them that way. But see, basically is... Because pride means then you're thinking... It means it's the same thing. Pride and insecurity are actually the same thing. It's just two different sides. Like you have one coin, and on one side you have a face, and on the other side you have something else, right? But it's the same coin, so it looks different. But it's the insecurity means that one doesn't really see one's not situated nicely in an identity that you feel comfortable with. And pride means you're very comfortable with that. You know, so that's all. So that's why it's seen that pride is confidence. But actually, that kind of confidence is inferior because one will make mistakes because of the pride. Because the pride means you take everything for granted. But if you're confident but not proud, then you're very observant of the field and you'll deal with it to your best. While the confidence that comes from pride, you tend to not deal with it so well. You know, because you think it's already going to go in your way. So it's an inferior form. Though nowadays, because people are so insecure, that's generally what's recommended. Right? So people with attitude, people with this, that, that's considered good as long as you're using it on someone else. Right? You use it on, you know, how you say, someone who doesn't appreciate it, then, you know, it's politically incorrect. But if it's on a third party, it's okay. You know, so it's very inconsistent, this method. The insecurity or the low self-esteem then is actually just another form of pride, because you're thinking I should be at this higher level, but I'm not able to actually perform the activities of that. So therefore I feel bad, right? I don't want to give the class because... unless when I finish the class, you know, people stand up and whistle and throw their chudders in the air and, you know, carry me out of the room on a palanquin, then I wouldn't want to give it, right? If somebody says, well, that was nice, but, you know, you could have done this or you could have done that, then you'd feel bad, you know? But so one is thinking, oh, he's humble. No, it's actually his pride is so great. He doesn't want anything to go wrong, which will therefore create a problem with his identity. His identity is I'm great, but I don't see the means in which to affect my greatness. Therefore, that insecurity comes out, which is then known as low self-esteem. So that's why all these things you can see is centered around your identity. That's the essential point. So that's why of all points being made in our philosophy, the soul is the eternal servant of Krishna. Is the first thing given, because then your identity is there. I'm eternal, so I don't have to worry about, I don't have to be afraid. Right? I'm servant of Krishna, so I know actually what I'm supposed to do. I'm not God. Right? Krishna is the greatest, so he's God. So right there you're dealing with identity. That's why Sambandha Gyan is so important. That if you don't understand the identity of something, then you don't actually know how to deal with it. That's why we put so much emphasis on Sambandha Gyan in our philosophy. Because then we actually know who you know, what is a living entity, what's Krishna, what's the material energy. Then we're very clear, so we know exactly where we stand, what to do. So then one can be very confident, like that. You know, it's like you have a knife, you're confident that it is a knife, you can use it. You don't have to be proud of the knife, you know, to make it. It does not that by being proud it makes the knife work better. You know, you generally get cut, you know, so it's a matter of that. But if it's a matter of you don't have, oh no, I can't use a knife, oh no, I'm not, you know, then it doesn't work either. It's just, this is a knife, you're a person who can cut, you know. And so then you go there and make the potatoes into small little pieces, you know. So that balance, that's why the Vaishnava is considered the most balanced. Because of this proper understanding, therefore, their confidence is not pride. And their humility is not lack of self-esteem. So it's just very, very natural. They're very comfortable to be with. You're like Srila Prabhupada, everybody was comfortable being around. You never hear of anybody who wasn't comfortable. You know? Because everything, he's just so perfectly balanced like that. Some may or may not like his philosophy, but they were comfortable around him as a person. He never made anyone uncomfortable like that, because he's balanced, so therefore everybody else is. Is that okay? Does that work? Thank you. Something else? On this? Yes.
How is the feminine passive?
How is the feminine passive? Because it's dependent, means how it means, the whole point is hladini means pleasure, right? Pleasure comes, is an experience, right? But then that experience has to be, is defined through some action, right? Some situation. But the action and the situation aren't hladini, are they? Right? So the prayojana is on its own, right? So it's dependent upon the field, right? So the field, that's the masculine. Then the masculine making that effort to interact, that creates the relationship. Because once it's connected, then the interaction goes on. But the interaction means the sambandha is approaching the prayojana, right? The sambandha is the field, so that's going to be the that's going to be the basis on which all interaction is going to happen. But if you're approaching a particular field, then that means you have to be going in the direction of that field. You have to interact with the field as, I mean, excuse me, not the field. The result means your prayojana according to the prayojana. You want that prayojana, then you have to use the field in a particular way to get it. You know what I'm saying? So even though the masculine is the main principle in the way of control, but still, this application relationship, then it has to be applied, that control has to be applied on the feminine principle according to the feminine principle's nature. Otherwise it doesn't work. Right? You know what I'm saying? My goal is I'm going to go over there, I'm the controller, I have this car, I'm going to drive this car. And then I walk over here to, you know, the field where they're growing Masuri dal. Is the car going to be driven? No, but I could stand there and say, I am the lord of this car, why isn't this car doing what I want it to? Because you haven't gone to the car. Right? And I can stand outside and say, drive, it's not going to happen. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So, that's a problem. I have to open the door, right? I can't open the bonnet and demand that it'll drive. I can't open the boot and say it will drive. Right? I can't take off the hubcap and go vroom vroom. You know, it's not going to drive. I have to go to the door that's on the side where the driver's seat is, get in there. Sit down there. I have to put the key, the Moharatha, in the slot, turn it, push the buttons, push the pedals, move the steering, but all according to the nature of that car. You understand? The car has oversteer, it works in that way. It has understeer, it works in that way. Right? That's why when people buy race cars for a family car, they generally crash it because the steering is different. You know, you move it this much and it's gone in a 90-degree curve, right? You know, they want to go around two or three times before the thing goes, right? So it's according to the nature of the car. It's your car, but it's according to the nature of the car. This is the science of the masculine and feminine principle. It's God and His creation. He's the controller, but He still works according to the nature of the living entity that He's interacting with. So if He does it, why won't it work for us? And if He does it, how will anything else other than that work? Does that make sense? So that's why the technicalities of the devotional process are so important to understand, that your sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana is actually properly understood and used. If you understand this, everything goes nice. You don't understand this, there will be a problem somewhere wherever you have a misunderstanding in one of these three. So therefore we see the masculine principle is the field. That field, by being operated, gets results. So that means who, and prayojana is the results. So that means who's doing the action?
Amen.
Yes, means the sambandha has to be doing the action. Because the prayojana is prayojana. But if the sambandha wants prayojana, it has to operate the field to get it.
So the feminine's passive.
So the feminine is passive, the masculine's active. Right?
But the feminine is active only in response to the...
Yes, the feminine responds. As Krishna interacts, then they'll respond to that. But the whole point is he responds, what he says is, I deal with you as you surrender. Right? He didn't say as you act, as you surrender. Mother Yashoda surrenders to Krishna as his mother. Therefore, he responds as her son. But he's the one that comes and says, I'm hungry, I want this, I want that. Does that make sense? Therefore, then she deals with that. Because if Krishna wants something, right, want is in prayojana. So then she is able to then act. Because then there is a connection between the prayojana and the sambandha. Right? In other words, the masculine principle needs something, so there's something to respond to. You know what I'm saying? The mom's in the house, right? All the kids are there yelling, screaming, driving her nuts. So she thinks sometimes it would be so nice, it'd be peaceful and this and that. But when the kids all grow up, get married and go away, you know, the last one goes, she's so happy they got married, they see him off that, and then she goes and sits down in the living room. It's peaceful. But there's no need. So peace isn't the real thing. It's the need that keeps it all going. Otherwise, why is she working so hard, driving herself nuts? Because she's needed. And now she feels a lack. She's not needed. Right? Isn't it? So that's the whole point, is that need is more important. So because of that, then you respond to that. But the point is you deal with your mom because she's your mom. Does that make sense? You know, if she's your wife, you deal in that way. If she's your daughter, you deal in that way. But when there's a need, in other words, Krishna wants to have interaction with the living entities, wants to taste that rasa of affection, then that inspires, that gives the connection. So Krishna's always there, the connection's always ready and willing. We're the ones that just have to recognize it. Why aren't we recognizing it? Because we think we're masculine, so we think we're the connection. You know, but it's not working. Right, you know, whatever it is, French connection, this connection, that, it's not working. Does that make sense? Okay, is that something else, some other point on this? Yes?
Sometimes you come across a person who's so elevated in Krishna consciousness that you defer to him. I mean, you are naturally humble when you're coming in his presence because you feel that, you know, he's so great and he's so small. At that time, is it this masculine propensity that is coming within us to really stop from associating with him? Like you were mentioning how everybody would be very comfortable with Prabhupada.
Uh-huh.
But still, Prabhupada...
That's out of respect. That you're comfortable, you're not uncomfortable. You know what I'm saying? That's out of respect. That's it. Because without respect, you don't have relationship. Right? That's the basis of a relationship. It means the shanta element is that you have appreciation of the other person's quality. You know, so whatever it may be, their position, you know, their personality, their influence, whatever it may be, that it means you find, you know, something important about them. That's the basis of the relationship. Right? So if that's there, then you can build on that. It can become more close. It can be friendship. It can be parental. It can be all these different things can develop. But the basis is that appreciation. So respect is the bottom line. So when the respect is so great, then there's no action. When it's great, but, you know, it's a little bit more close, then there's activity. You understand? So that's why awe and reverence that has no action is not appreciated as much as that what does. You know? Like, let's say, Prabhupada had come to Bombay, and his rooms weren't ready. You know, and they'd be saying, yes, coming, 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 but they weren't coming. So then one day he just, I think he basically sat down and, you know, just took his chutter, sat down on the floor, you know, in his quarters and say, this is where I'm staying. They were saying, no, we have a nice room for you. He says, no, this is my room, I'm staying here. Right? And then sometime later in this whole kind of pastime, then he wanted something and people didn't properly arrange it. So he's very angry. And so basically speaking, all of the servants except one all basically left the room because Prabhupada's angry and he's upset, you know, I think he wanted some juice or something, you know, like that. And just, you know, so they just said, okay, Prabhupada doesn't want the juice now. He's very upset. And so they all left. But one of the servants then came very, very, you know, kind of like slowly, slowly, as Prabhupada's yelling at him, telling him he doesn't want the juice, nothing, this and that. You guys are late. Can't do anything right. So many things like this. Slowly walking up to the table, very carefully put it on the table in front of Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada looked at him, picked up the juice and drank it. Right? You understand? So that's because that reverence, but still it doesn't obstruct the service. The other one, it's fear. But this one, it's reverence, but there's affection. You understand? Does that make sense? Like that, that's it. Okay. We'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi. Look at the count.